Wake up, sleepyheads. This is CJSF 90.1 FM.
And you're tuning in to Slumber Party. This is CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby Community Radio from Simon Fraser University. Burnaby is located on the ancestral and stolen homelands of the Halkomelem and Squamish-speaking peoples.
You can listen online at cjsf.ca or on our radio app, which you can download from the app or Google Store depending on your device. Keep up to date on our social media at linktree/cjsfradio and learn more by visiting our website, cjsf.ca. Welcome, everybody. This is Slumber Party, and I'm DJ Coco.
And I am DJ Star. Welcome. Thank you for tuning in on this Tuesday.
Not too bad of a Tuesday, I'd say. Mm-hmm. It's all right.
It's going okay.
It's just going.
Yeah.
But anyways, we have a topic as usual, so stay tuned for later on, because we're going to be trying to go and kind of tie our previous topic of marriage from last week and see if we can go more into the kind of more the definition of love and go into some of the biology, some ties to society as well that DJ Star has, but we'll see how that goes. But we're just gonna start off with the music first. So the first one you'll be hearing is called Again by Sahadi. So I'm gonna try to set this up and enjoy.
So you make it right where I stay. So attentive, you just my first way. I'm avoiding to care with the sun, I'm preparing down the affairs. Want you to wait, like I should break the innovations. Go again, again. É que dói, essa mora que dói. Acho que me pare que é por ver, tem que estar para que este mundo. Ah, é que pó, essa mora é que pó. Vê tantos fars e que tem curia na olhar pô. É que dói, essa mora é que dói. Acho que me pare que é por ver, tem que estar para que este mundo. Ah, é que pó, essa mora é que pó. Vê tantos fars e que tem curia na olhar pô de cor.
Thank God we made it to the woman in science, technology, engineering, and math. Whether you're a seasoned professional or just starting on your journey, the Society for Canadian Women in Science and Technology is here to support you every step of the way. From mentorship programs to networking and skill-building events, we've got the tools and resources you need to succeed and thrive in STEM. Visit SCWIST.ca to learn more. That's SCWIST.ca. We can't wait to connect with you.
To my world, put
Welcome back. This is CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby, community radio from Simon Fraser University. I'm DJ Coco.
And I'm DJ Star.
And you're tuning into Slumber Party. So the last song you just heard was called Moog by
Moog.
Moog, M-O-O-G by
what
Rich.
What does this mean?
I have no idea, but very cool. It's by Rich Acorn. I'm really bad at pronouncing things, but it really reminds me of stuff and music that Bitcoover plays, which, little teaser, is at 8 p.m., so stay tuned later on. And then the song before that, you heard I Hate DJs by Chiara Savastra.
Little switch up.
Yeah, that was more
from
of
the
an,
last song.
Yeah, more of an indie pop kind of song, but I thought it was funny just because of the name. Yeah. And then you heard the one right before that one, you heard The Credits by Juniper Smile. And I like that one. I really like the riff of the guitar and the drums in that one.
That was good.
Yeah, pretty good. But
nice picks.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
But anyways, we are going to try to attempt to discuss.
We are going to discuss.
I mean, we are going to discuss.
It's not
going
to be an attempt or a try. We're discussing right now.
Oh, yeah.
You better listen to it, too.
Okay, so love.
Love.
Start us off.
We're talking about... Oh, okay, I'm starting us off. I think for this discussion, just to preface, we're mostly going to be talking about romantic love and what's associated with that.
Mm-hmm.
There is a general definition that DJ Coco has here, however.
Yes. So there are multiple definitions of romantic love. The general definition I could find, which probably can describe it best, would be a set of emotions and behaviors characterized by intimacy, passion, and commitment. So this would include care, closeness, protectiveness, attraction, affection, and trust. But if we were going to go to more specifics into the neuroscience of love, I would say this is a bunch of neurochemicals in terms of, let's say, falling in love, like falling in romantic love. So this can be really associated with a lot of reward circuits that flood our brain. And then that kind of give us the physical or emotional response that we feel when, I guess, we're with that person.
Yeah, that's actually also similar to addiction in a way. They've looked at, researchers have looked at the activity like in the in certain brain regions, and they are in areas that release dopamine, which is part of the reason why people become addicted to things.
Right. Yeah.
That chasing this
reward circuit, mm-hmm. especially. I think especially at the beginning of a relationship too, that dopamine is getting hit. And there are also other neurochemicals as well. At the same time, you can also see or feel oxytocin. Oxytocin, which is also commonly known as like a love hormone, so gives those feelings of calm and contentness, and usually associated with mate bonding. There's another one called vasopressin, and this has more of a role in nursing, pregnancy, that kind of mother-kid bond, and as well there are feelings that kind of are. This vasopressin is more prevalent in your body when you have a long-term relationship. So I think it's not more feeling of stability than that like instant dopamine rush kind of thing, mm-hmm. at the beginning of a relationship. And as well, there's also testosterone and estrogen, which drives lust. So that's more of the neuroscience definition.
Yeah. And I do have this theory of love that was developed by this scientist called Dr. Helen Fisher, which is, I referenced this last week, but I didn't know the specifics of it, so I want to, like, explore it a little bit more, but I'm going to use a lot of the chemicals are also, like, associated with these different stages, too. Mm-hmm. So the first stage is lust and attraction, so that's just, like, the initial, if you think someone's attractive or not, and then that attraction will lead you to, like, potentially pursue romantic love, which has this feeling of euphoria, elation, energy. And then she theorizes that this feeling, like this obsession that you get, is for you to focus all your energy on a specific person to reproduce with.
Oh.
And then third is when romantic, intense romantic love turns more into a commitment and attachment. So you feel calmer, you feel more content. This is seen more after like 2 years plus into a relationship.
Mm-hmm. So probably like that vasopressin.
Yeah,
could be a role in that.
Definitely. Like it, and then she thinks it evolved to link you to another person for an extended period of time, which you can raise a kid with.
Right.
So this is very, you know, doesn't really take into account anything other than her theory on evolution and chemicals. So a big question that I had last week too was, how does she explain like gay relationships or relationships where people don't want to have kids? And I watched a few videos and she pretty much just said that we have these very primitive brain systems that evolved a long time ago, like, and that we still retain this. She didn't fully answer the question, and then she just said like sex is good for your overall health. So then I was thinking, I don't know, what do you think about this theory, DJ Coco?
For the sex drive, I've actually, back to that one book that I always reference.
Bonobos?
The Bonobos. I've got to go back to the Bonobos. My book called Different by France de Waals. Read this book about primates, specifically about chimpanzees and bonobos. But for bonobos, they, first of all, they're matriarchal woman, or female bonobos rule everything. But they all have very active sex lives. They go for anything. They go for everyone and anything. It does not matter of the actual gender of the bonobos. They don't. It doesn't matter. But the people in the researchers who watch them, the primatologists, they always note that it forms social connections between the bonobos for like having intercourse with each other. I think maybe it could also, for gay and lesbian people, and just people in general, that having sex is also a form of social connection. That, I mean, that we don't have sex with our friends casually now, which
some
is something
people
different.
Do.
Some people do, but I feel like that could also have an impact from the past and how related we are to these primates, and these behaviors could leach into our own behaviors.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think definitely like just looking at the chemicals of love is not really enough to fully analyze and like understand it, because exactly like with the bonobos, there is a social element to it as well. And especially in human societies, there's a very like culturally constructed idea of love, which is why I wanted to look more into queer theories on love after seeing Dr. Helen Fisher's theory.
Right.
So I looked on this woman's blog spot, actually. Her name is Coral Herrera Gomez, and she looked at love, the current state of love is like, it's very bound up with institutions like marriage and divorce, and then about like what is considered a normal type of love. And normally we do see love in very conventional formations, like with the nuclear family, especially as like this is very pushed on us as marriage, like heterosexual marriage, having kids, having a house, having a job, like that whole kind of idealized thing of love is very prominent in our society.
Mm-hmm.
And something that I found really interesting is that They talked about gender a lot in this blog post, and how we have a very, very traditional division of gender, which implies that we have to partner with like a member of the opposite gender to be complete, which I feel like I hear that kind of idea a lot, where it's like, oh, this person's my other half, or, you know, like something like that. And people who do not really express their love in this way are pushed to the margins of society, and their freedom to love is kind of removed, especially in a lot of other countries as well. But I just thought it was interesting that we have divided gender so much, because I know a lot of, like, every person has a sense of masculinity and femininity in their bodies, like, at birth. And then as we kind of grow up, we learn to like exaggerate something or not, which is, I've been reading this book. This brings me to basically this one point that I wanted to hit. I've been reading this book. It's called Annabelle by Kathleen Winter, and it's about a child who grows up intersex, and they were just talking about their experience, like, looking out at the city there in St. John's and, like, just seeing all the people. So I just want to quote it for a second. The male or female in them had been both diluted and exaggerated. They were one, extremely so, or they were the other. Everywhere Wayne looked, there was one or the other, male or female, abandoned by the other. So, I think, what do you think, DJ Coco? Like, do you think that represents how a lot of people show their gender identity?
The abandoned by the other part. Very deep. Almost shed a tear. It's definitely more... It was definitely more exaggerated back then, obviously. Like mm-hmm. in the
it was
said
in the 60s.
Yeah, if it was said back then, I could definitely see that. Now, I mean, we are trying to push away from the very stereotypical, I don't know, outward and inward expressions of masculinity and femininity. Like, I think it's more acceptable for a man to be a nurse or a woman to go into computer science kind of thing. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's as, not shunned, but it's more accepting in environments, and as well by, for example, workplaces trying to promote being more inclusive of everyone. Even the radio station, we have promos for a woman going into STEM. You know, I feel like as a society, we're trying to collectively work on not exaggerating the very... binary idea of man or like femininity and masculinity. Mm-hmm. But no, yeah. I find it interesting.
I think a lot of people, yeah, we are definitely getting better as a society with accepting people that fall out of the binary, or even with our own journeys with gender, like how we feel about ourselves, and it's more accepted to question it and mm-hmm. reflect on it. But I think I definitely do see that when there are certain roles, not even just roles in how we express our gender, but just how we're expected to act or, you know, move as a man or a woman, like that also kind of erases a part of ourselves in a way, like the way yeah. that we're socially conditioned to act. Like men will have to restrain their emotions a bit more and have this social pressure to be like aggressive or be active or be the person who's the main breadwinner. Mm-hmm. And we do see that still in relationships. Like there is a pressure for men to pay for the meal something to kind of, you know, that's how they're expressing, not necessarily love all the time, but that is still a form of like expressing some sort of relationship.
Yeah, I mean, I have more of a specific example mm-hmm. for that. I can definitely, I mean, I'll mention it. I'm going to do it. I've been, okay, I'm in a relationship as well, or started a relationship, and I have a boyfriend, and so make relevant to the conversation that this is a dude, this is a male.
She's scientific with
I'm
it.
Getting scientific because we're in a scientific conversation.
My male boyfriend.
We are in a scientific conversation. I was talking to my mom. We went out for dinner one time, and we ended up splitting the bill. And this was the early stages of us dating. I mean, it's still the early stages of us dating, but that's not the point.
Let's get into the story. No, let's get into the love story right now.
It's not too sorry, but I just want to connect it that I told my mom about us splitting the bill, and she instantly was like, "What? No, like he should be paying for everything for the first like 6 months or year. Like he should be paying for everything because that's what men do." And I'm like, "Well, hold up. It's not expected that the guy should always pay all the time. Like splitting the bill is acceptable." And she'd be like, "Oh no, but that he's not a real guy. Like he's not going like, what am I trying to say here? Like
I see what you're trying
yeah,
to say.
Yeah, you know, like he's not being masculine enough. Like he mm-hmm. needs to treat the woman like," and just stuff that was very stereotypical of, I don't know, I guess the patriarchy.
Definitely.
And I was trying to tell my mom that. I was like, this is the 21st century. Like, we are moving past this very superficial idea. And she does not accept it at all. Mm-hmm. And so it's things like that where I'm like, you know, we are still trying to push. I mean, with the older generation still are trying to push the same traditional idea.
But. Yeah. I mean, this generation, too, I see a lot on social media of wanting this traditional relationship where a man is going to care for you and like spend money on you, and in return you're going to offer, you know, all these other things that a woman is expected to offer. And I think, as this blog said, that bringing it back to this blog, that we learn how to love or how to treat a person that we're romantically interested in through media and like through our culture. So like a lot of songs, TV, fairy tales, all of that, like we absorb that. And of course, a lot of the media that we grew up with is still pretty patriarchal. Like, we're not really, you know, post-patriarchy at this point. So I think a lot of it we do absorb, and like, you know, we kind of see it as the man's role to make a move or something, or right. like be the pursuer. And then the woman is just kind of, you know, waiting for something to happen to her, which I feel like is, you know, a common thought that a lot of people have.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
So, yeah, it is interesting now. Like, I'm also in a relationship, just seeing how, like, when you have this awareness of how patriarchy might influence it or not, like, it does, you're like, like, I know I don't want my relationship to fit into this structure. So it's like, you need to work on, you know, thinking about what kind of preconceived notions you have about men or women or like their roles in the relationship.
Oh yeah, definitely. I mean, for my relationship, I feel like, not that I felt insecure of it, but my mom mentioning it again, here's another example, that I was the one who asked out my boyfriend.
And my male boyfriend.
I was about to say male, but I'll use the actual word. And I felt okay with that, but I told my mom then. She, I don't know, it felt like she, not ashamed, but she's like, why would you do that? And I'm like, it's another thing. It's like, why am I being shamed for being independent and making my own decisions? Like, why are we still bound to this same traditional right? idea? And yeah. so it makes me feel bad. Like, I felt bad after, and I don't feel bad now, but it was like, I was perfectly fine beforehand.
Definitely.
So yeah, that would be an example of our culture as well, is that just have to be very masculine. You masculine, like, you gotta ask out the girl and stuff like that, which is just, we gotta move past that.
Yeah, I think that's such a good example of how breaking out of even like traditional gender norms in a straight relationship is still kind of looked down upon in some ways, or like a lot of people might think it's, yeah, like not how it should be. So I can't even imagine like existing in a gay relationship or a lesbian relationship, or like a relationship where you have multiple partners would be, if even like certain roles in a straight relationship are ostracized.
Oh, yeah.
Or thought down upon, which is like, and we know, a lot of people know, like, we don't need those roles anymore. And I feel like in my relationship, I don't really feel like there are those roles. But it still is something that we are taught to aspire to, I guess.
Yeah.
At least as children.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Like, I feel like, and definitely with media today, it's like, oh, you have to have the short feminine girlfriend and the tall dude. You know, like, the I'm just spewing dude. Words yeah. at this point. But, yeah, it's just those general ideas, like, even the social hierarchy as well, like, I feel like it's also kind of boosts your prestige up if you have the desired kind of relationship that society wants as
definitely.
Well.
Definitely.
So.
Yeah. And then one other thing I wanted to add is that a lot of love is very romanticized, fantasized over in the media, like, the whole fairy tale and they lived happily ever after kind of thing is very, very common. And this doesn't necessarily have to do with queer theory or like straight relationships. I think it just can apply for everyone, is that in reality, like, love is difficult. Like, you need to work for it, and it like challenges us and everything. So I think like imposing these traditional gender roles as like, this is the secret to, you know, having like a happily ever after life is just not accurate. And then the conception of love in that is also not the most accurate either.
Right.
So, yeah.
End to that. And strong ending.
End to that.
Well, thank you. That was very interesting. Mm-hmm. I tried to look up some more notes on the biology. There's things like I'm just curious. I was curious last night specifically if animals could experience romantic love, because there's actually very little evidence that. Well, I mean, it's very unknown that if we can see or I don't know understand that animals can feel romantic love, because I mean they do mate. Actually, there's very little true monogamy, but we'll get into that in a moment. But it's kind of it's difficult because how do you measure love in animals?
Yeah,
like, there's no way to actually measure it. There are things like we can see, like for example, dogs being attached to their owners. There's the very famous specific example of this Skye Terrier from Edinburgh, Scotland. His name was Greyfriars Bobby. Don't know why.
Scottish.
Very, very Scottish name. A little long as well, but Bobby, his owner was named Constable John Grey. And after Constable John Grey passed away and they dug his grave up in a cemetery, the dog laid on his grave for 14 years every single night. And this is a true story. So how is that not attachment or some sort of love, you know? Like,
it definitely is love. I'm for sure certain that animals do feel love, but you're right. Like, the question of romantic love, which is, like, the intimacy and the sexuality of it is, like, where is that link?
Yeah, like, do they know further past reproduction? Like, I know, like, animals, of course, want to reproduce, but do they feel the same romantic way that induces them to want to have romantic love? Anyways, but I think my personal hypothesis is that they do, because animals have the same neurochemistry as us. They're very similar. So they are capable, basically all mammals are capable of having, they have dopamine, they have oxytocin, they have cortisol, they have all those same neurochemicals that we have that give us those experience, like how we experience love, I guess. Mm-hmm. And so I'm thinking, like, I feel like they do, you know?
Yeah, why would they not?
Why would they not? And if it helps evolution, it probably should.
Yeah.
So
I agree. I mean, I thought that some animals mated for life. I'm not sure if that's true, but
that's what I thought too. But specifically, mating for life, there's a slight difference. So it is monogamy, which monogamy, the definition includes exclusive mating, raising their offspring together and spending time together. But only before it seemed that there's a lot of monogamous species, but it was not true monogamy. So there's this one. So there's actually only 3-5% of 4,000 plus mammal species of all on Earth that practice true monogamy, which is this exclusive mating, raising kids, spending time together. Because most of them practice, actually they found recently that it's called social monogamy, which is the same kind of principles where, like, sure, you raise this kid together, you spend time together, and you pretty much mate long term, but both animals see other animals as well and have intercourse.
Mistresses.
Yeah, so they have little side... I was going to say...
Side things. Side pieces.
They have side pieces that they also see, but they still raise their kid and they're still normal and everything. They're not mad at each other, I guess. Mm-hmm. So that's something that I found really surprising, because what can that indicate for humans? Because we are basically mammals. We're not... This is also seen in primates like chimpanzees as well, who share 96% of our DNA, which, I mean, we should probably be pretty similar to them.
Mm-hmm.
So that, then I was thinking, like, how, what about cheating and everything? Can we justify cheating? You know?
Well, it's more like, can we justify monogamy, too? Like, is that the most natural thing?
Exactly.
Because, life, mating, monogamy, relationships?
Exactly. Because if barely any species practice true monogamy, you know, like, something's a little fishy here. Yeah. So anyway, that's something interesting I found. There's actually, there's not much research on this because it's such a difficult topic to actually conduct scientific,
like, romantic
research.
Love,
yeah, how
with
do you
animals
measure romantic love? Like, you don't pull out a questionnaire and make the monkey, like, try to,
like, a Likert
yes,
scale,
no. Yeah,
one
no.
to five.
Like, answer this, monkey. No, you can't do that. So, well, I guess it'll be really hard to measure. Maybe we'll find a way in the future. But that's the hypothesis I have. But as well, I tried to also look up some information for queer people, like, for gay men and lesbians as well. Like, how is it a evolutionary advantage for them to be, like, paired off with each other? And, you know, like, because we're pushing monogamy so much, and evolution, I guess, is pushing monogamy to continue the race, but then we just have people who don't want to continue the race.
But yeah, is it evolution that's pushing monogamy, though, if, like, a lot of species aren't even monogamous?
I think because evolution pushes reproduction, which is a consequence of, I guess, a form of monogamy, like the social monogamy.
Okay.
So that's
okay.
What,
but you
I
don't necessarily
think.
Need monogamy to
no,
reproduce.
No, that's what, no. I think evolution just wants as many people as possible.
Okay.
That's the main goal. Like, there's different pathways to getting to many people as possible. That's what I think. But I found that, for example, for an evolutionary advantage for two gay men, for example, since, I guess, if we're talking very scientifically, like, in the animal kingdom, the gay mammal would probably be the gay mammal would probably outcast, because why is he not finding a female mate? You know, what's wrong with this mammal? So they would pair off with another low status gay mammal.
Okay, who wrote this?
No one
what
wrote
is this.
This
reference?
No, I didn't. I'm just making up. Not making up some words, I'm just making it easier to understand. But then the social status...
It seems,
status,
like, homophobic.
No.
Two low-status males.
That's just what I wrote as my own words.
Continue.
Okay, yeah. Anyway, it would increase their social standing that they would stand together. And as well, if they do want to carry, like, have an offspring, or not have an offspring, but care for one, it promotes biparental support for the offspring, which is two is better than one.
But how does it explain them being gay? Because it just seems like, oh, this is a consequence.
I think it's just the love. I don't honestly know.
Yeah, I feel like explaining...
You can't really explain.
Getting too biological with love kind of erases a lot of people from, you know, this certain idea of love too. Like, even... Like, fathers, for example, we could say, like, evolutionarily wise, like, we don't really need fathers other than, you know, what their main role is in reproducing. Like, all you really need is a mother, but then...
But then men, because for guys, you need... They sometimes have resources. They got lots of resources for your offspring.
Okay.
Or they have... There's this one called the good genes hypothesis. I actually, when I took my first year biology class, and we learned about these guys called widow birds. They have really, really long tails, and it kind of affects their way of flying, because, of course, like, your massive tail is dragging on the ground as you're trying to fly. But it attracts the female widow birds because it indicates that they have a superior gene to them. And so they want the healthiest offspring as possible. So they would go for the males with long tails, even though it would affect their way of flying and for survival from other animals, they would still go for them. So I feel like that's something on the biological side that may help the conversation, but...
Interesting. Interesting tidbit.
A little tidbit.
Yeah, fact.
Yeah.
Factoid.
But, yeah.
It is hard to, like... Because there are definitely, like, we know there are gay animals out there, right? Mm-hmm. Like, that happens in the animal kingdom. Yeah. It's not unusual at all. So then, to explain, like, if them being gay made them low status, like, why would they be gay in the first place? You know what I mean?
I think sometimes just, I think nature just has deviations. You know, like, I don't think anything, everything
saying,
can be perfect.
Like, that okay wait are you saying like old, like being straight is more natural than being gay though, and that being gay is a deviation from being
straight? Not the word natural, not the word normal either, but it's just like if we have a standard deviation,
no
of course the majority of people would be quite the same, but then there's always going to be outliers, you know. And I think that could also be relevant for talking about the sexual orientation of people.
I have a problem with this like theory is that it just poses like heterosexuality as like the most normal thing about us. But I feel like as being queer is becoming like more accepted in society, and like more people are feeling like okay with, you know, like sharing their sexuality with mm-hmm. others, like we do see that there are more people who are like openly being queer. So I'm like,
But I mean, like,
I don't know if being straight is even the most normal.
The most normal. So you think that there's more queer people than?
I'm not saying that, but I'm just saying like we can't say that like being gay is, you know, like not. Like not a normal
thing. I would use the word maybe more common, like it's more common to be heterosexual,
yeah,
than not like normal, or I mean the general population would be heterosexual, because I mean if we like with statistics and things as well, like I feel like it could never be more than 10%. I
mean, where did that number come from? I'm
sorry. I'm just throwing out numbers here. No, but conversation's getting
quickly
less scientific.
Population analysis. Sorry. Here.
Sorry, everyone. Mm-hmm. But you know, like,
but it is an interesting question.
Interesting.
Like, if we think about evolution as strictly reproduction, like why we're trying to like explain away like why do gay people like this
why
is like a confounding confusing factor for a lot of like scientists and theorists, but
yeah, like
I think love does not need to be that complicated as it only serves for reproduction, because like you said mm-hmm. before at the beginning, like social connection,
yeah,
feeling like there's so many good things that come from love and feeling loved for us as humans to like thrive and even like survive and everything. Like mm-hmm. I don't think it's like love's only reason cannot be, in my mind, like my opinion is that love cannot only be for reproduction, even though that is probably like a result of it. Like
it's more nuanced than that.
It's definitely more, yeah,
of
like,
course, yeah,
more details than that, just that. So
yeah
I
think that's
time to wrap up, I
time
guess
to wrap up. That was actually longer than I thought as well.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, that was our little wrap up on
little
that
discussion.
Maybe we can, I'm actually next time, why do queer people exist?
No.
Oh my God. I think that's what DJ Star is trying to go
this
to.
Is brutal. I'm sorry for all the queer people listening right now, like your existence is valid, it's not like outside of the standard deviation, it's okay.
It's okay now. No shame.
Like
at all.
We just
got too scientific that it may be insult.
Yeah. And I'm not straight either. I'll just like to say that too. Mm-hmm. Like I don't think like being queer is not.
So you're like trying to defend. You're like, I'm one of you guys.
God. Okay.
Okay. Play the music.
Play the music.
Play the music.
Like,
we're
I'm
playing
just
the
trying
music.
To say.
Okay. This
not coming from a place of like hatred or anything for sure.
Okay. Anyway, this next one is called Peace by by Berlioz. So
peace, everyone. Peace and love.
The world is pretty much the way it is, and you have your life in it. When we do encounter the difficult things in life. Rather than running, we can get to a place in ourselves where it is pretty peaceful.
I'm a at me now, I'm not coming down. I dance like a queen, and my dress is a dream. Oh, look at me now, I'm not coming down. I dance like a queen, and my dress is a dream. Oh, look at me now, I'm not coming down. I dance like a queen, and my dress is a dream. Oh, look at me now, I'm not coming down. I dance like a queen, and my dress is a dream. Oh, look at me now, I'm not coming down. I dance like a queen, and my dress is a dream. Oh, look at me now, I'm not coming down. I dance like a queen, and my dress is a dream. Oh, look at me now, I'm not coming down. I dance like a queen, and my dress is a dream. Oh, look at me now, I'm not coming down.
Yeah.